Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who prefers to travel by catapult, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back to hour number two of Nightlight. Great to have you with me. We have gotten some excellent texts tonight. Our question of the night is, what is your favorite pizza topping? I'm encouraging people to think outside the box, and we've had some great suggestions. So let us know what yours is on the stream or at 855-752-4842. Brian Kelly is with us tonight. And we were talking pizza. We talked a little bit of acting and him as a little person, which is tough to believe, but he pulled it off because he's that good of an actor. So, that's pretty cool. So, Brian, have you seen the giant spider invasion?
I have not seen the giant spider invasion.
I recommend it. I saw it 2 months ago, and it was pretty unique.
I have a picture of someone, like, I'm replacing spiders with ants because I'm picturing the giant ants and someone screaming about that, but it's, no, I'm conflating two.
This is horrible. This is like they put a huge spider, like the effects in 1975 are kind of cool to look at what they were doing. Like blood looks different. It's really red. But like what they did with this spider, they put it on a VW chassis and it's like just what they had to do because they didn't have CGI or anything. It's really fun to watch. You might get a kick out of it.
So what's interesting about that, you said it came out in 75.
Yeah.
Star Wars came out in 77.
Yeah.
Think about, they were probably starting to figure out how to do Star Wars at that time. Now, they created for Star Wars, they created Industrial Light and Magic essentially for Star Wars to exist. And look at a movie like that, and then go and watch another cult classic movie, Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon came out, I think, in 1980.
I think you're right, yeah.
Something like that. After Star Wars, and you can still see the strings on their spaceships, you know, and you know, for plot wise and entertainment wise, there's different things, but again, Star Wars is Star Wars, but just to understand how really mind-blowing it was, you're watching movies like The Giant Spider and the Attack of the Giant Spiders and stuff, which is also, again, I'm not taking away from that,
right?
But I'm saying, like, the ingenuity they had to use with putting on a VW chassis to make it work, and then someone inventing an entirely brand new system of things, and then still years later, people are using strings in their on their spaceships. It's interesting how things work. And now you can just type in something. You can type in caricatures of us right now, and we have an entire caricature of you and I talking. You can make a song in a genre with just a couple clicks of put in a description of a song and they'll spit out a really good song in that genre. It's just amazing how technology has expanded.
That is crazy.
That's a little tangent there, but my goodness.
No, but it's interesting when you say that because you sound like a Star Wars guy. My son is a Star Wars guy. I like Star Wars a lot. I don't know. The movies kind of run together for me now with all the offshoots. I can't remember what happened when. But
yeah.
I will say, even what are considered the bad Star Wars, I think it would be episode one, the middle ones that came out, the middle trilogy.
The 1, 2, 3, because it was bad because all they cared about was the CGI.
But that's my point. Like, okay, you're right. Those aren't maybe great films. I always typically prefer good acting and good writing. I like the auteurs love all that stuff.
That will always carry everything for you.
Yes, exactly. And so typically, and this is why I kind of surprised myself. When I saw those Star Wars movies that were not considered great, I was so in awe of what I was seeing on screen. I'm like, I can't believe what I'm watching. It did take me out of the story, but in a good way, because the story was not great. But yeah, the effects are incredible.
Yeah. The reason I say that is because in interviews with like Samuel L. Jackson and stuff, so think of this as from an actor's point of view. They basically said, all right, so we're going to do you're going to go and fight this animal. And all it is green screen. It's just green screen.
Right.
So Samuel Jackson's asking a couple of questions, like, how big is it? So I need my eye line. Okay. What am I fighting? How does it have tentacles? Like, what is it? They're basically like, just go out there and dance and do a bunch of stuff and we'll just make it around you is essentially what it came down to.
Right.
And that's, it's cool because you have this ultimate infinite creativity to be able to work with, but without having a boundary or a box, several people could be imagining two different things. You know what I mean?
No kidding. In the same scene. Yeah. That's a great point.
So it can be very, very confusing, as awesome as it can be.
You mentioned Flash Gordon. We have a cult classic we're going to discuss a little later in the show. Do you have a favorite cult classic film?
So in preparation, we were talking about this. I looked up the IMDb 100 top 100 cult films, and basically it was all the movies that I watched in college. This is all of but I came across my favorite movie, just about my favorite movie of all time, and that's UHF.
Is that the Weird Al?
Weird Al movie, that's UHF.
That's your all-time favorite.
I wouldn't say it's my all-time favorite, but it's top. If it's on, I'll watch it, and I will preach the gospel of UHF to everyone.
Oh, that's
honestly
great.
That's what I'm trying to do here with Civic Media. If you watch UHF, and it's not just me. That's why Corey and I get along so well. Corey, the guy who's really the mastermind behind pretty much how this whole thing works. Corey and I have a shared dream of making UHF a reality. And that's kind of what we like. It's never going to. It's an impossible dream, but it's one of those things where why not? Why not just do whatever we want on a UHF station and have a great time doing it?
And nobody's looking after
that.
We
get to do it statewide.
No, you could get away with anything. I mean, I saw parts of that. I don't know if I ever saw the whole thing all the way through, but now you got me curious.
Michael Richards, man, Weird Al basically takes over an entire UHF station and does all of his, he makes whatever things come to his head. Like he's got Raoul's Wild Kingdom, and the guy famously, he goes, instead of badges, we don't need those thinking badges. Right. He's got all these badgers and he's opening up the door. Badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers. But then there's also things like Gandhi too. This time it's personal, and Conan the Librarian.
Oh, I remember Conan.
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System? Do it now.
It's
fun. But Michael Richards is in it, and he's Stanley Spadowski, the janitor, and he takes over this kid's show that was failing, and turns out that everybody loves it, and now becomes the biggest hit in the entire place. And it's fun. It's fun.
That is great. I completely forgot about that movie. That was worth the segment alone. I'm gonna have to rediscover UHF.
It's a great movie. Awesome.
All right, so I'll say some films. You tell me if you've seen them and what you think. Do you consider The Big Lebowski a cult classic?
It's considered a cult classic, but since I've lived it, cool.
You live a cult classic. Okay.
By the way, Tim Walls. Walls is the real Lebowski. Tim Walls and the real Lebowski. You, the guy in the wheelchair that is confused with Jeff. That I think that's the first person I thought of when I saw Tim Walls.
That's fantastic.
Anyway,
Let's move on. I love when the Big Lebowski says when he's trying to say how you say his name, it's El Duderino or El Duderino. And he looks so impatient, that actor, and he just starts laying into him. It's so great.
You are a burden on society.
My advice to you would be get a job, sir. Do what your parents did. And the guy did nothing. He did nothing. He inherited all his money. Yep. Talk about how ahead of the times that movie was. And he claims he fought in the war and he didn't. It was phenomenal.
I think basically cult following, you need to have like an independent movie that really makes it or be made by the Coen brothers. Because
basically
on this film list is all Coen brothers stuff.
Yeah, I would say The Big Lebowski outgrew cult status because now it's like, I think it's pretty mainstream.
If you can turn it on a Saturday afternoon, I think it's won the cult status war.
Absolutely. What about Clerks?
Yep.
Seen Clerks?
Love me some Clerks.
Okay.
I think that kind of blew itself up out of the water, but I love the Clerks. I love the original idea, but it's interesting.
All right. Showgirls is on this list.
What?
I mean,
I think that's the other requirement is either If Kyle MacLachlan's in the movie, it's instantly because it's a cult movie. Kind of like
Blue Velvet, though.
Oh yeah,
love Blue Velvet.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell. If Bruce Campbell's in it, that's also a cult movie.
Army of Darkness is on here. Is on this list. There's a few I haven't seen.
Bubba Hotep.
What is it?
Bubba Hotep.
I have not seen Bubba Hotep.
Okay, so here's a cult movie. So a group of cult movies from Troma Films. They're the ones who did The Toxic Avenger and actually began Trey Parker and Matt Stone doing Cannibal the Musical. But this movie called Bubba Hotep, it is Bruce Campbell as Elvis, who came out of a coma and is living in an old nursing home, and Ossie Davis, who plays John F. Kennedy. Ossie Davis thinks he's John F. Kennedy, and they have to save the world. It's amazing, and I saw the trailer the other day, and I'm like, I can't believe I forgot I watched this. It's amazing.
It just is one that always went under my radar, and every time I hear someone talk about it, I crack up, and I'm like, I got to see that film, but I never have. What about Office Space, Brian? Do you consider that a cult classic?
No, I consider it a documentary. That movie's a documentary. I have lived it in every way, shape, or form. It hits. It resonates. It hits now. It hits it every time. It's the same. I have watched that movie from start to finish and then let it continue and watched it again.
I know. It's so great. I love it. And we had Richard Reilly was on the show last week, and he was in the middle of a story. I do too. And he's talking about how Mike Judge, the studio, made his life hell when he was making it. They didn't think it was funny. And then it comes out and it becomes, the thing just blows up and it becomes a movie people find, and they want him to make a documentary. They want him to make a sequel. And he says, take a hike. I love it.
Yeah. Mike Judge is, from all accounts, he's a dude.
Hey, can I keep you for one more, just a couple of minutes? I want to ask you about one more movie. We got a very quick here to do, and we'll do that, and then we will let you get on with your evening. Brian Kelly is here, ladies and gentlemen. It's Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here today, yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. It looks like Frank Zappa is dancing right now. If you're watching on the stream, Brian Kelly is with us. I wanted to ask you one more film, and it's one of my favorite. Yeah. It's definitely a cult classic. The Warriors.
I haven't seen the freaking Warriors.
Oh, see, there you go.
I know.
I got to see UHF, and you got to see the Warriors.
Come out and play. That's.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah, I would recommend it. I think you'll love it.
I'm actually going to do that. So. My whole life, I somehow managed to avoid watching. Why can't I name the movie right now? Johnny Utah with
Point Break. Yeah,
Point Break. I managed to avoid Point Break until 2006. I had never seen the movie. Somehow, I had never seen the movie Point Break, and the same night I was introduced to a vaporizer was the same night that I happened to watch that movie. And literally every reference to Point Break, because I grew up with everybody referencing it around me all the time, every reference downloaded and hit at the same time. And I was like, now I get it. So I feel like I'm going to have that exact revelation with the Warriors. When I finally, I'm going to have to watch it on my own, because I don't think Amy's going to let me watch that with me. But I'm going to bring one around for you back to a cult movie.
Okay.
That brings it around to the, you'll see, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
So Blade Runner, I am one degree of separation from that.
Oh, sweet.
I did a commercial where I was a blue genie. I think I've talked about that before. I I shaved everything above my waist except for this wonderful mustache, and they spray painted me blue. And there was a guy who played a leprechaun who happened to have also been an Ewok, but he was the bear in Blade Runner. And I got to hang out and talk to this guy. It was pretty cool. So I worked with a guy who was the bear in Blade Runner,
which that, is kind of interesting. Don't you love that? Did he have great stories?
Yes, that guy talked for hours about so you know Tony Clark from Bad Santa, the little person. He was the was the elf with Bad Santa. So he worked with my buddy Kevin Thompson as an Ewok when they were like 18 or 19 years old, and he's got pictures of them like just as barely college age kids, just with Ewok dresses on or like outfits on. But he said like the masks, they couldn't see out of them. So, you know, all those scenes where the walkers are shooting around and one of them has to die and everything.
Yeah. Well,
to get all the coverage for all that, they had to run in zigzag patterns. Right. And so they knew that they were third or fourth in the row. And whenever they hit a turn, the last one died. And so they had to count how many turns, and then they died, and they jumped off and died. They had an explosion.
Oh, that's awesome. So they had to
count mortars because they couldn't see. But yeah.
That's a great story. Now I'm going to watch for that. That's so cool.
Yeah, I every time I watch Jedi, I'm like, yeah, they're getting blown up there. That's the zigzag pattern.
So here's what I'll do. This is my vow to you. Right. I'm going to watch UHF because I've totally forgotten about that movie. And you got to check out Warriors. After you watch Warriors, let me know, and we'll have a discussion about it. Because there's some of the coolest shots ever. And it's a little unrealistic. It's a little cartoonish, but it's great. I think you'd love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Fantastic, man. Hey, this was fun. I appreciate you coming on with us tonight. It's always fun to talk to you, man.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime.
Keep,
I got you.
Keep working that beard. It's coming in.
I will.
You're definitely post-pubescent. I will say that. There's no question.
I'm like one of those faces with the iron filings. You get a pile it on the face type of thing. I'm that guy, except they stick. And they get everywhere.
Thanks so much, buddy. Have a great night.
You take care.
You too, bud. That's Brian Kelly. Check out his work on the Maggie Dawn Show, and you can hear Brian quite often on the Maggie Dawn Show. He is he's just fun to listen to, whether he's talking about politics or movies or pizza or beards or whatever. Conrad, do you have a favorite cult classic?
I know we weren't saying it's a cult classic, but The Big Lebowski is so funny.
Yeah. I would say... we got some text here too from the 310. I think this is JB again. The pendulum on XFX went too far and it needed to come back and level out. He says UHF is parody gold. I have to see UHF. I forgot all about that movie.
Would The Breakfast Club be considered?
No, but I could see why you would think that because it's stood the test of time and people find it. And I think like a movie like The Big Lebowski kind of worked its way out of cult status. Because it was cult, and then too many people found it, and now it's just a classic, I think, as opposed to a cult classic. But
okay, well,
I don't know. But you know, you can call it whatever you want. If you want to call it a cult classic, call it a cult classic. You liked Office Space, right?
I did like Office. Well, I'll say this: it just changes so quickly and so for the weird, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I'd say I did like it.
So. All right, you sent this to me, this Adam Sandler article.
Yes.
He calls Rob Schneider to check on him every week.
Yes, he does.
And Rob Schneider is like tickled by this, thinking Adam Sandler is a great guy for doing that. But doesn't that seem like, would you kind of be offended if you had, hey man, how you doing? Are you okay? Like every week?
I don't know. I feel like that's a good friend thing to do is just, they've been in so many different movies together. I feel like they're just grown a bond over time that, you know,
I guess it's not weird if you do that to a lot of different friends, but if you're the friend, they must think you're strange or not taking care of yourself or something. I don't know.
So I watched the new Adam Sandler special on Netflix today.
Yeah.
It's called I Love You, I think. Something like that. Anyways, it was pretty funny, actually. He has a great bit about a genie.
It's a stand-up special?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But he does it different because he does like songs in the middle of it.
Yeah.
He'll do a bit, go to a song. But he had Rob Schneider perform an Elvis song in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Rob Schneider used to do a great Elvis.
Yeah, he still does.
And you know, I was at a table read. I'm totally name dropping here. I was at Danny DeVito's house for a table read, and Rob Schneider played one of the characters. And it was for a film called Relative Strangers, which I ended up having a role in. And Rob Schneider was not in the film, but he was hilarious. The way he acted. And people make fun of him, maybe because of his politics. I don't know. He's gotten a little strange, but he's a really, really talented guy.
I mean, any role he plays in, I will definitely, I know I'll laugh.
Well, but Deuce Bigelow, I mean, I'm not saying the guy.
Now that's a cult classic, right?
Brian Kelly just texted in. He says, I forgot to mention Big Trouble in Little China. That was on like three different cult classic movies. We should we need to give more time to cult classics, but we have an actual cult classic we're going to discuss next. We sat down with Bill Rebane or Rebane. We'll Rebane. Leave it open. We'll see what Craig says. we sat down yesterday and talked, and we'll play that interview. That is coming up next, our interview with Bill Rebane about his great film, The Giant Spider Invasion. Check it out if you haven't. I recommend it. All right, this is Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why are these lights so bright? Did we get hitched last night? Dressed up like Elvis. Why am I wearing your class ring? Don't call your mother, 'cause now we're partners in crime. Don't be a baby, remember what you told me. Shut up and put your money where your mouth is. That's what you get for waking up in Vegas. Get up and shake the glitter off your clothes now. That's what you get.
Welcome back. This is exciting. I'm glad you guys are with me tonight. I've got a really interesting interview we're about to do here, and a guest, I would call him a special guest. He is a kind of a filmmaking legend here in Wisconsin, and he made a film years and years ago called The Giant Spider Invasion, and he makes his home in Wisconsin, and he's got a great resume, and he is a really fun guy, and there's a big event coming up that we'll discuss too. But right now I would like to take just a minute here to welcome my next guest to the program, Bill Rebane, director Bill Rebane. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you said it right.
It's one word, Rebane.
Rebane, Bill, or Rebane?
Rebane.
Rebane. I've only seen his name on movies. I haven't heard it pronounced. So thank you for the tutorial there. Bill Rebane welcomes, joins us now on Nightlight. Great to have you, Bill.
Thank you for the brilliant introduction.
Well, Eric. My pleasure. This is, and we have your friend Craig Kinnett is here in the studio with us. I know he is part of the organizing this event. We'll talk about in just a minute. But Bill, for those people listening right now that have not seen your film or know you, just if you can give us a brief history of your background. Even though you have this incredible background, tell us who you are.
That's very embarrassing. That's an embarrassing question. Plain old Bill. I've been in the motion picture business now, I think, for, let's see, it would be 70 years.
Wow.
70 years, Bill. That's amazing.
That is incredible. And just to, so you were in your 20s when you made The Giant Spider Invasion then, roughly?
I think so. I think I was 19 or 20 when I made
oh my goodness,
the infamous, and when I don't like to talk about Monster Gogo, actually, early title was Terror at Half Day.
Oh, wow. Okay. What, Bill, where did you get the idea for the giant spider invasion? Where did this come to you? I love the way you start the film and how the spiders show up. I think that's so great, and it holds up over time, which I think is fantastic when movies are able to do that. Where did you get the idea?
Well, it was an awkward situation. I got contacted by a commercial producer that made utility commercials in Madison, Richard Huff,
yeah,
who was dying to make a feature-length motion picture, called me up and we got together and he wanted to make a science fiction movie of all things. And I had just finished the first picture in the movie in Wisconsin, which I'm not all that proud of, but nevertheless, it did get some play called Invasion from Inner Earth, originally titled The Selected.
Okay.
And because of that, he called me, and we got together for brainstorming sessions in Madison. He had never written or thought about a feature film before. All of a sudden, he got the idea to do something like that. And most importantly, he said, if we did something on a science fiction movie, he could get the financing. Well, that was the magic word. I said, if you get the financing, let's talk.
That's the hardest part of any project, right? Is getting it off the ground. I meet tons of people that say, I got this great idea. I got a script. Do you have money? No. Oh, okay. Well,
that's a nightmare getting money.
Yeah.
It was then too.
That sure is.
It seemed a little easier then, and it actually was. Nevertheless, we came up with all kinds of ideas. It always began with a meteor coming down from outer space and what comes with it.
That's so great.
Actually, the first title he came up with, and I shuddered, was Alien Night, Silent Night.
You know, Bill, I was going to ask you if Giant Spider had an alternative title, because it seems like all these other ones that you've done had an alternative title. I think you picked the better of the two.
Yeah. Well,
I nixed that one, and I wouldn't dare taking it to any sources that I knew in Hollywood at the time. So we went and I said, well, I think, well, what could come? The next thing was, what could come out of this, whatever crashes to Earth? I said, well, I said, that's the challenge, to figure this out and pace the floor, drink a lot of coffee or get a few cognacs in between and smoke a lot of cigarettes. And we came up with the geode idea. A meteor comes to Earth and it contains geodes, and these geodes have little spiders in them. It was more of an idea on the order of Kingdom of the Spiders with Bill Shatner.
Hmm. That's so great.
Actually, that idea became fruition when Shatner did Kingdom of the Spiders. As a matter of fact, Shatner and the distributor had watched Giant Spider Invasion a dozen times before they came up with and went back to the idea of the tiny spiders, the Kingdom of the Spiders.
That's so great. And that was kind of when William Shatner was in his heyday, too. Like, that's a good...
Was Star Trek kicking off at that time?
I think it was.
He was in Twilight Zone a couple times, too, at the early
right.
days.
Yes, it was. I can tell you exactly when it was. In that, about 1982, when I was just right after I did Capture Bigfoot.
And
Capture of Bigfoot has become my favorite Bill Rabane movie recently. I just saw one. It's so much fun.
I saw that in your IMDb credits, Bill. I also love that you filmed this all over Wisconsin, but you had a lot of locations. That must have been tough. Like, even with a budget, going to all these different places in Wisconsin, was that a challenge even back in the 70s?
Well, by that time, I had a pretty well growing studio and 120 acres of back lot. Actually, we shot the... Pretty much 90% of us shot on the studio lot.
And that's right outside of Gleason, Wisconsin, Bill?
Right, between Gleason and Irma.
Okay.
Bill, you came to America very young. I read that you learned how to speak English. You were multilingual, but you learned how to speak English watching American movies. I love that. Is that true?
That's very true, yes. I had nothing better to do at the age of 15. I lived on in a neighborhood in Chicago. Incidentally, that's an interesting story, because the south side of Chicago on 63rd Street It had a theater almost on every block. And one side, the south side of 63rd Street, was dominantly a black neighborhood. And the north side of 63rd Street was dominantly occupied by immigrants from all over Eastern Europe, Estonia, Latvia, Romania, Lithuania, Poland, you name it. And the beautiful thing was that I would go to movies at early in the day, and they had triple and quadruple features at the theater. So I went and sometimes watched four or five pictures a day.
Oh, wow.
And I came home at midnight. And the nice thing about it was at age 15, I didn't have to worry about walking down 63rd Street at midnight. Everybody was friendly and wonderful people.
Yeah.
On both sides. That's what I remember as part of the American dream.
That's great. Bill, I want to ask you, my guest is Bill Rabane. He's the director of The Giant Spider Invasion, which was shot entirely, or at least mostly in Wisconsin back in 1975. Bill, the film made, if I read this correctly, $23 million. That is no small feat back in 1975. Is that accurate?
actually, it was $24 million. And I heard it. I didn't know about it until I heard it on a Johnny Carson show.
Oh, my gosh. Did you have to sue the studio?
No, the suing was not in, that was a word that was not in my mind at that time at all, in my head. I just wondered where the reports we got. We had an accounting firm taking care of the production partnership. We got a few reports, I think, about five or, at best, four or five reports.
Okay.
And then they stopped coming because it was a set up under a tax shelter deal.
Huh.
In other words, the investors took a 3-to-1 loss because of the tax shelter system.
It sounds like some Hollywood accounting there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a sore subject for Bill, too, I got a feeling.
Oh, well...
And creative bookkeeping, you know.
Right.
I can only tell you that the distributor, Brandon Chase Group One Films, about 4 months after release of Giant Spiders, bought a $3 million mansion in Hollywood Hills.
Yeah, I don't think has ever changed, Bill. I know that's still alive and well today, the Hollywood accounting.
Creative
accounting, yeah. I wanted to ask you, I found this fascinating. In addition to your contributions to the film community, just from the films you've made, you created, tell me if I'm getting this right, the Cineterium Circular Motion Picture Process. Can you elaborate what that is? And I know that, at least if what I read is accurate, that made you a pretty rich guy pretty young. It sounds like at 22 you had a pretty innovative idea there.
Well, actually, that was not my idea. It was an invention by a German filmmaker who I worked for a very short time as an apprentice, and that actually is where I got my start, in Hamburg, Germany. And he introduced me to his process called Cineterium, and I had to put my head into a lampshade, and instead of a lamp, there was a little projector under the shade, and it would shoot the picture upwards, and I could see the picture all around the lampshade from the inside. And I was so fascinated with him. He told me all the plans he had, and because I, being from America at that time already, he thought maybe I could have the entrepreneurial know-how and the ability to promote the process in the United States. Well, I was all game, and I did it. And as soon as I got back to the States, I started raising money for it, and I had enough material with me to do it.
Bill, Craig and I were talking about the spider and how big it was. Tell us a little bit about how you guys designed that spider.
Well, the whole picture started out with little spiders. I thought at the most we could probably deliver a create a 1 foot spider, and I had a self-made special effects guy that thought he could do something with a one or maybe a little bigger spider, but the distributor insisted. He said, oh, we can't do anything unless the spider's got to be big, huge. I said, how huge? He said, oh, at least 25 feet. I mean, there would have been no distribution contract if I wouldn't have agreed to a 25-foot spider. And I, coming back to Wisconsin from L.A., now I was faced with the challenge of how in the hell do you make a 25-foot spider or create one that can do the thing that it should do? And by accident, my Bob Millay, my special effects guru, had a few two beer one day and looked at a Volkswagen chassis that I had sitting in my backyard. He said, does that thing run? I said, sure does. He says, I think I got an idea. I mean, I think we could use that and create a 25-foot spider out of that. And he and a group of other guys at a welding shop and junkyard got together and actually built this two spiders, actually. The VW spider, using a VW chassis and building a cage around the front and the back part of the spider. And then they decided they had to have, I said, well, it's not going to do it all by itself. It's going to have some human beings in it to move the legs.
Right.
How many people were in the vehicle, Bill?
At one time, there were seven people, seven.
Pete, you should see how big that thing was. I mean, honestly, and this was shot in the summertime, right, Bill?
Yeah, that was the problem. It was hot that summer, too.
That's so great. Bill, I want to ask you, we have to take a very short break, but I want to ask you when we come back about your campaigns for governor, which you launched on two separate occasions, which I found fascinating. Coming up next in just a couple minutes, I'm Pete Schwabe. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. We are hanging out with directing legend Bill Rabane here on Nightlight tonight. Craig Anthony Kinnett is joining me here in
everybody.
The studio. He has been gracious enough to introduce me to Bill, so he's here sort of just being part of the discussion as well, and it's great to have Craig in the studio and Bill on the phone. There is nothing more exciting to me than hearing stories about how innovative people were in bringing special effects, especially, I mean, what you did, Bill, for the money back then, even. And what's it like knowing you made a film? People can still watch it on Tubi. It's called The Giant Spider Invasion. I watched it just a couple months ago. What does it feel like? You're 87 now, I believe, to know that you made a film that people are still finding and talking about. That's got to feel great.
Well, it does. I wish it would have felt this great in a pocketbook.
I know the feeling.
That's all it has been, a little, the negative of it.
Source of contention, yeah.
In 50 years, I think I told somebody else, I think I made a total of $70,000 in 50 years on it.
Yeah, I wish they could do something about that. That still goes on today. But from an artistic standpoint, thank you for that great contribution. And it's so neat that you have something with your name on it. And that's something they can never take away from you. Movies, when we make movies, our name is on them. It's a piece of art. And it's, to me, that's what it's all about. Sure, we'd all like to be richer. But do you have, Bill, why, let me ask you, you're in northern Wisconsin. Why Wisconsin? You came from overseas. You lived in Chicago. I'm sure you spent a considerable amount of time in L.A. Why did you settle in Wisconsin and much less northern Wisconsin?
I was so busy with industrial corporate image film as a cinematographer, production manager, and director for a production company in Chicago that I needed a break, and I took a vacation. Long story short, to northern Wisconsin, do some fishing. Got stuck at a local tavern.
Stuck.
And just by accident asked, is there any property around for sale here? Because I love the North Woods. And sure as hell, somebody steered me onto a farm, 80-acre farm. And I took a look at it. bought it in a heartbeat, called my wife and said, honey, I just bought a farm in northern Wisconsin.
Outstanding.
And you're still married? Or the marriage lasted?
Well, have a lot of fun living there.
Bill, you also, I saw in your Wikipedia page, you had two separate runs for governor here in Wisconsin, a couple decades apart. What did the film business drive you so crazy? You're like, I got to do something even crazier. What were you thinking with that?
No, the ulterior motive was always that being governor would give me a chance to promote Wisconsin as a, especially the northern part, the North Woods of Wisconsin, as potential filming locations for motion pictures and building a, at that time I had in mind building a major studio similar to my studio that I was affiliated with in Germany, which was a, under the one roof concept where we shot a lot of American pictures for Columbia Pictures.
Oh, that's great. Well, you can't, sorry, go ahead, Bill.
It was a unique complexion. A production complex, which I got the idea they wanted to duplicate it in northern Wisconsin or central Wisconsin.
Well, Bill, throw a couple of those titles at Pete. I'm sure he's heard of them before, the ones that you shot in Germany.
Well, I think the first was How I Won the War with John Lennon, Odessa File, John Voight.
Oh, yeah.
Dollars with Warren Beatty, Goldie Hawn, Scott Brady.
Wow.
So those were big films, too.
Yeah.
I in those films, I was just the shaker and doer that I created the promotional concepts and did the sales work and dealt with and flew back and forth between Hamburg, Hollywood, and Chicago, where we opened offices to represent the studio over there. And it was cheaper to make pictures in Europe at that time because of it. $1 was 4 marks, so it was called Runaway Productions.
Hmm.
60s and 70s.
So, all right, so Bill, you've been a cinematographer, you've edited, you've directed, produced, you've written. What's your favorite part of the whole process of filmmaking?
Cinematography.
Nice. Why? Because that's the most artistic part, aside from my own opinion of writing the script. Is that because it's your favorite, like the most artistic, or?
I think so. That and being in control of knowing what you get. And I like to shoot and direct at the same time.
That's what I was going to say. He's a shooter and a director at the same time.
That's so great. Well, we just have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about this event coming up in Waiwega. This is a really cool thing that I know Craig is involved in putting together for you, Bill, the 50th anniversary of the giant spider invasion. Again, you can find the film. I think I watched it on Tubi a couple of months ago. Craig, tell us about the event. And Bill, hopefully, they're hoping you'll be there. I hope you'll be there in Waiwega at the Opera House.
We've got a room for him. Well, what we've got going on is at the Gerald Opera House in Waiwega, owned by Kathy and Ian. They have a really good film festival there, too. So if you ever get a chance, Pete, that's a great place to see films.
Yeah, I've heard it's great.
But also on Friday, October 4th, we've got the Giant Spider celebration of the 50th year of the film that we're going to be having prizes there, props and signed merchandise, and some dancers, some musicians. And the doors open at 6 o'clock and the show starts at 7. And I see we've got a message there, a text from Dan that says, will there be drinks? So yes, Dan, there will be drinks there. So we want people to have a great time that night.
It sounds like a great night, Bill. This has been a real an honor to have you on the show. And thank you for your contributions to the movie business, not just the films you made, but the other innovations as well. And I hope you'll come back and be on the show again sometime and have a great time on October 4th.
It would be a pleasure, my friend. I was happy to do it and happy to hear about this event. And let's see, it should be a real whopper.
A whopper.
All right.
Well, and if there's anybody out there from the Volkswagen Corporation, Bill, and I would love to talk to you about the commercials that he's been doing for your product for nothing for the last 50 years.
Yeah, they got a bit of mileage on the Spider Invasion for VW.
All right, fantastic. That's Bill Rabane, Craig Anthony Kinnett joining us in the studio here to discuss the event. Thanks so much, you guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Nightlight tonight. And thank you to Brian Kelly. We'll be back tomorrow night with more Nightlight. Good night, Wisconsin. Oh, take me to your-